Okay. The title of the message is Trends, Expectations, and Wonders for 2019. I originally had thought that we would share some ideas. I still would like to hear what people think and can remember of last year and what they kind of think may happen next year or a trend or whatever. We'll eventually get to that. And so I chose the scripture reading of Acts 2, 42 through 47. And they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to another or to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their houses and ate together and were glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. While attending a convention, three psychiatrists took a walk. People are always coming to us with their guilt and fears, one said. But we have no one to go to with our own problems. Since we are all professionals, another suggested, why don't we hear each other's right now? And they agreed that this was a good idea. So the first psychiatrist confessed, I am an impulsive shopper and deeply in debt, so I overbill patients as often as I can. The second admits, I have a drug problem, and that is out of control. And I frequently pressure my patients into buying illegal drugs for me. The third psychiatrist says, I know it's wrong, but no matter how hard I try, I just can't keep a secret. I thought that was pretty catchy. This is the last Sunday, as we know, of this year and of the month also. It's traditionally a time when we reflect on the past year and we tend to look ahead and we make New Year's resolutions and whatnot. I don't. I gave up on them. It'll just be what it'll be. I try. It's nice if you have some goal that you want to try to do for the year. I think it's an honorable thing to do. And we tend to look at trends and expectations and wonders of the past year and into the future. A lot of TV and a lot of radio is playing the best of. You have reruns that go through and events that stand out are replayed and relived. Listen to the news and various different things. They usually recap the year. Some of the happenings are best left, I think, in the turning pages of life. We simply don't want to really remember them or bring them up anymore. And so we turn the page and don't really want to, glad to see the year go by. Others we laugh about. I think it's important that we can laugh at ourselves at some of the things we did in the past year. Some of them will lift our spirits up, and others give us hope. What is happening in today's reading that I just read? I think there's a number of things happening. Some people looked at it as an early beginning of the church that never took ground, but I'm not quite so sure that it did in some ways. Others believe that they were sold all their goods and they were waiting for Jesus to return. I'm not sure that's everything that was happening here, because it does say they sold property, but they still ate in their own houses, so they still retained some property. There's a mix of things going around. What caught my eye in this passage, and where I want to go, is many wonders. The word wonders, which is an interesting word. When I started looking up and tried to figure out what it really meant, it has a whole host of meanings. And in some cases, the word wonders in the Bible was along with miracles. But in some places, it says miracles and wonders. So it obviously had a multiple meanings throughout the Bible. It was, like I said, an early beginning of what they called the way, the teaching of the way, the beginning of the Christian church. Some people look at it as Christian socialism. I think we could probably take some ideas from this, but nevertheless, It was a startup community with new ideas, and they were working together and to try a new trend, a new expectation. They weren't quite sure how everything was going to go. So they were trending in a way, and they had a lot of things to work out. This country has grown, I think, on the basis of a lot of people coming here to start up a new upstart and new communities and new ideas and whatnot. There was various different things. Most people came here, some people on their own will, some people not. But it was basically not necessarily working together for the betterment of the whole country. At the time, it wasn't a country. But it came over to startup communities, a lot of startup communities. That's how I see this country starting. It started a lot here, there, everywhere, and they wanted to grow their ideas. But wonders. I want to go there. I want to go to that word, wonders. And I have a tendency to, sometimes when I'm reading along, and I'll just wander off in the middle of a sentence, and you know, I'm reading, and my mind will wander on off and go someplace, and ding, 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 off it goes. And I wonder sometimes if it's what it meant. Wonders. People sat and contemplated and thought and wondered, and you know, what is all this about? They contemplated. The word is has, like I said, has a lot of different meanings. And I couldn't tell you what one particular, I couldn't pick one particular word and say this is what wander means, to wander. When I was very young, people, some of my friends, and when I was in the plumbing, worked as a plumber, they used to call me Drifty because I used to wander around. They'd catch me spacing off somewhere, sinking and whatnot. My nickname was Drifty, and even to this day, those people that I see that I worked with, they still call me Drifty. So that's a part of my life that long ago. I still kind of, I say I can drift off real easy. That's not to sleep. I often wanderland for sure. Some of the means is to awe, to an amazement, like of a natural event you're amazed at. It could be a state of mind where you're curious, or you inquire, or you seek, or you question. And I think all these things are what's happening in this section of Scripture as people were beginning to contemplate what this new thing was that they were doing. There was a lot of questions. They didn't have a zillion different writings like we do today. Types of wandering, where like you chew things over, or you contemplate, or you meditate, or you muse, or you ponder, you reflect, or you speculate. Wow. Anyway, or think things over. So the word has a lot of different meanings. And, you know, as people are starting up these new communities, all of this was in play in the beginning of the church. One example is of wondering is like if your car is making a noise, you sit and listen to it, you take a mechanic and you wonder what the noise is. So you know, I mean that's an easy one there. I have a story that I want to use, or an article from the Plow magazine that I want to use to fill in here a wondering of, this is a person's wondering of what the world could be like in the future, or his journey through life, or the beginning of his life. And it was written by John Thornton. He was a pastor, a Baptist minister in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And I take it that he was rather young, and it was titled A Debt to Education. Now, anywhere along the line here, I inject what you want to say or think along the way. And because this is open for a lot of discussions. And there is four questions that I want to deal with in this article. Is education but another consumer product? Does capitalism or any governing concept have a responsibility to those who it doesn't lift up? Is it all just a matter of human choice? Does God bear any responsibility? And can we as humanity change some of these institutions to create a different world? And the idea that God having responsibility, or that capitalism, or entrepreneurship and free enterprise has a responsibility, had caught my eye in this article, and then from there it went. So he starts out that in the beginning of that universities market themselves as a product, and they create this big form. And so he went in search of a university. He went to Baylor and he went to Duke Divinity, and so he looked at all these brochures, and all these universities are displayed as a marketing. They want you to come and buy their product. And they want to develop you into and formulate you into a particular character. And they entice you to come and buy their product. It's a marketing. But he says later on that debt is not necessarily talked about. I have never been to college. I don't have student loans, so I don't know what that's about. I don't know the college experience. Many of you do, so please inject. So as time went on, he said the idea that he had to borrow money and he had to get student loans, and then at that point, they talked about money and how to repay it. And he said that that it was seen as if a student over-financed themselves, that and their debt was greater than what they thought it should have been, and they suddenly come to the realization that they have this huge debt in the future that they have to pay, then they looked at them as that it was a choice of the student. This is how he perceived it. You chose to buy this product. Therefore, you are responsible for paying. And that is the part that bothered him somewhat. And he said people's lives or students' lives are shaped by the amount of education they can have. A person can be very talented, but yet cannot afford the education. And therefore, we are inhibiting people or students and young people from living their full potential because of this. And I think he's right. I think that does happen. We make it such a hard struggle for our students to live out their talent. I think in this country we do that. I think we do. And he said, gives an example of a family that went to a New York university. They have to deal with $120,000 of debt. And so their whole lives are shaped around this money that they owe in student loans. It keeps them from having a flourishing life. That's a Greek term that I've learned and picked up, and I see that here that being used more and more. I like that term, a flourishing life. Plato used it, and Socrates. I'm working on a sneeze. And so it's a balancing act for these students, and once you have families and whatnot, you have to pay it. The average American, Americans in 2018 carry $1.5 trillion in student loans. That's what's out there now. And he says about the average one graduating in 2016 has about $37,000 in loans to pay. And that's about 44 million Americans with student loans. That's about one quarter of the total population. You can check the figure. So that's what's out there now. This is current things that they're dealing with. And so he says, debt forms us, not your education necessarily. And he sees this as a huge problem. And he says that a student usually ends up with a feeling of guilt because of the inability for them to pay or pay it back. They are talked into thinking that by having a college degree, they will excel up into the world, and they will eventually succeed. He talks about how he worked 3 and 4 jobs to pay for his in college, and he said to the point where exhaustion set in, and he had to give up some of his jobs. And so he calls it a retributive view. In other words, it's a choice that these students went. You must survive how you survive, and if you don't, it's your fault. And he said how they would talk about, well, you should have eaten ramen noodles and peanut butter sandwiches rather than going out to a restaurant. And he said that was some of, when he went to seminars, you know, within the college on how to figure out how to pay some of this debt, that this is what they said. You shouldn't have spent more money than you could afford to pay back. So they laid the guilt on the students. This is how I understand it's happening today. We have educators out here. You can tell me if this is the case or not. This was his perspective, and this is how he seen it, and how it was put upon him, that it was merely a choice that he ended up with this huge debt. And he seen that as inhibiting him from becoming something greater than what he could. Then as time went on, he said, he went to Dave Ramsey type seminars to figure out how to manage his debt. And the first thing they said was that don't lose sleep over it. You shouldn't feel guilty for being underwater in your mortgage and having an unexpected pregnancy and student debt. He said it was a series of steps that got you into this, and it'll be a series of steps to get you out. In other words, you just be smart enough and figure out how to get out of it, and you'll be okay. And that he found rather disappointing. And again, they would bring up the idea, well, you should eat more peanut butter sandwiches rather than going to Mexican food and or to a restaurant. But he also says, does anybody realize the possibility of fatigue and the medical, from not eating right, the medical, you can't think right, you don't work right, you don't function right when you don't eat right. This, I see, must be the present-day situation in colleges. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is this is what happening to some degree? I don't know. I don't see no heads nodding. We have retired people here, so I'm not sure. But I'm sure it's obvious when I understand that this is still going on today. But Elizabeth Warren, who most of us know, her idea or her thoughts on some of this was that we don't really consume more. The average person is not consuming more. It's rather that the cost of fixed goods are moving up, such as housing, healthcare, education, combined with stagnant wages. This is kind of really wandering off from, but anyway, this is. And anyway, she sees the problem as more that wages and whatnot haven't kept up pace, which I agree with that. I think in this country, we think that everything for the lowest dollar, everything down, cheap, which is not always necessarily good in my perspective. And I don't, in relationship to what they say, what I read in the Bible here this morning, the scripture reading in Acts, taking care of one's need is more than trying to, more than just saying, eat peanut butter sandwiches and ramen noodles. It certainly is a lot more than that. And that's what this country, I think, has to look at a lot more closer. If we want to flourish in the world of community, we have to start seeing ourselves as a larger community. Demonization. Who is responsible? Well, there was a person who wrote a book called Neo-Liberalism's Demons. Adam Catio. I don't know. Adam. We'll just say Adam. And he emphasized that sometimes the Christian story it can be similar to what we say in a capitalist point of view. Is God responsible for any of this? Does God have any responsibility at it? And the Christian point of view, or the idea of a more of a conservative point of view, is that man fell from grace. He chose to, or he or she chose to walk away from God Therefore, all of this is their responsibility. God remains free, perfect, and out away from it. It's the devil's problem and the human's problem. That's a traditional Christian point of view. I see some scowls, and I would tend to agree with that. I think that's demonizing people for choices that they make that they may not have any other choices to make. And I think that that's kind of a wrong way to look at what Jesus or the Christian story. And he also says that, I'll just read this little blurb. Why does evil exist? This is the traditional logic runs this way. I'll quote him here. Because God made creatures with freedom of choice, they have chosen to act sinfully. That God knows that they would have sinned provides no reason to hold God responsible. God's goodnesses remain intact while evil continues. He also sees the parallel with capitalism. The capitalism has risen to a godlike status, entrepreneurs and free enterprise, well, I add on to that. We have risen that up, raised that up almost to a godlike status. And I have said for years that it is responsible for those who do not survive or who cannot flourish in this system. But for some reason, we seem to have a lack, even in Christian ideology, we say, okay, if you choose to follow Christ, then you all will live a better life, and that's your choice. If not, you just go to hell. I think that plays out in Christian theology. I think we need to change that also. I think that's a wrong way of looking at Christianity. I've always said that capitalism and free enterprise should take on morals and ethics. It has to take on responsibility. If this country wants to survive and flourish, it has to come around and have responsibility and flourish. Rather than create a pyramid effect, we should have a field. We talk about a level playing field. The Bible talks about a field in which the farmer plants, in which all people can flourish, rather than a pyramid. In a pyramid setup, in which we have in capitalism and free enterprise, and even in opportunities only allowed for a certain amount of people. There's only a certain amount of people that can go up in a pyramid system, and that's what we have. And the rest are not going to make it. It's just the way it is. You can see similarities to our Christian faith. Only a certain amount are going to, in the Calvinist point of view, only a certain amount are going to be saved. The rest are just dross to be thrown and burned to hell. So these two things play hand in hand, as he says. They play hand in hand. It demonizes people, as I said, especially the poor and the vulnerables, minorities. And it makes them solely responsible for their misfortune. How many times have we heard that? I mean, we hear that continually over and over and over again. Well, that's their fault. They made bad decisions. I get so sick and tired of hearing that. Yes, people sometimes make bad decisions. I understand that. Also, he says that a college degree, yes, does increase your income. But it also comes at a very high debt load. It's that a college degree will keep you from falling down, but not raising up anymore. He says it'll maintain your level and you'll be in debt, but it's not going to lift you up anymore. So,
Financially,
wealth-wise, material-wise, what have you?
Well, I think some of the things I learned in college classes did, in fact, they were enriching. I feel like they did lift me up in some ways. Financially, maybe not as much, but...
And how many years ago was that?
I graduated in 1965.
Right. He's talking about in today's terms. He said in today's economic market... The most that a college education will do is keep you from falling down. And that's it. I don't know that. I'm only taking this gentleman's word for it.
Well, he's talking financially.
Financially, bettering yourself.
But
mentally or whatever, education is always good.
I think it's probably worth it for most of us, even if we don't get rich. as a result of the education?
Well, I don't know that. I think that the idea of student debt is getting to be so great that we're gonna suffer. That next year, yes, Dan.
They should separate them a little more according to their capability of going through college. Like the ones that might better go to the trade school should be sent there, and the ones that they can tell aren't going to get anything from that college.
They're just going to go there and party and have a good time.
Yeah, either that or they just don't have the IQ to do more.
Yes.
Services. Yes, but not every college that's in a town that's close to you offers what you need.
That's true.
That's
yes.
You
know,
right.
I'm looking down the barrel of
yes, you are.
College
yes.
And how we can afford.
Frequently, the first 2 years can be similar in any four-year program, and so sometimes you can take those basic courses close to home and then go away for the more specialized.
What?
It doesn't always work out, but often it can.
There's money available, you just have to hunt for it.
I know.
There's scholarships. Not everybody can get a scholarship.
Everybody that qualifies fill them out.
Do what?
Not everybody that qualifies for said scholarships fill them out or know that they exist.
Right.
So if you can find them, chances are you're going to get them.
If you can find them.
If you can find them.
It's easy because at the university we have something goes wanting because nobody applied.
I heard that already too.
Everybody was going for it and nobody applied for the money.
I heard that already too.
The worst that can happen is just apply for it.
But that only takes care of a certain amount of people.
But we're talking about college education here, and yet at the same time, our high schools are not preparing the children for life or for college. So that no matter what they go on to, even if it's just into the workforce, they're not prepared for a real life.
And I'm not going to blame teachers for that. Go ahead.
I didn't learn to write a check in high school. I didn't learn to balance a checkbook in high school. I didn't learn to do a tax form in high school. But I know how now, because when necessity hit, and necessity hit, as well as parents who said, you know, there was a chance to get a junior charge account. I got one, and I was taught to use it and only charge what I could pay for. That is still part of my life. It did not happen in my high school because I was in an academic curriculum. I was on my way to college.
Maybe some of these things ought to be assumed by parents for a change.
Yes.
The problem is they're not.
Yeah.
I mean, the reality of it, it's not. So, I mean, we can say should do this and should do that. How are we going to deal with it realistically? I agree with you, Bob, that parents should do. But you have single parents. You've got, you know, a lot of stuff going on in families. I mean, it's a very busy. We have.
I had Phil Brennan for math, and he did teach us to write checks and keep an account.
My experience was in the Midwest. My experience was in a huge high school. And if you were in an academic curriculum, that wasn't part of it. And there wasn't any crossover because you were locked in and you didn't have any time to get out of it to go take another.
Even though my math has some stuff about writing checks, no time in high school did I ever get typing. That was just for the commercial students. And boy, when I got to college, I wished I could type.
And they had a class for us, and it was at lunchtime. Late for lunch and took the class while you were eating your lunch. Because if you wanted it, it was there. But you gave up something else. That was a choice.
I think it does take a lot of work. There's no question about that. I'm not denying that you have to put some effort into it. And I think sometimes we want things just handed to us and, you know, automatically and put it into our brains and download it and we're okay. It does take work. I understand that. But you have this large group of people who are not necessarily wanting to work their tails off anymore, but who still want the benefits. This is what's coming up behind us, whether we like it or not.
There's also something called mentoring.
Yeah.
Yes.
And mentoring is often, my guess and my vow, it happens. But I've had students that I ended up doing some sort of mentoring. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it was good, I'm just saying it did. But I had a mentor in college, and it was purely by accident. He was a little drunk. And I was scared to death of him when I first took his class. And was told to be scared of him. But somehow, we connected. And he was a major influence in my view of what I would do and how I would do it. And those things you can't always program. I'm not going to say it.
Life is rich.
But, you know, there are some things that you
experience.
They happen.
Right. Experience. I tend to agree with that. One of the things that he says is we spend too much time blaming one another and ourselves rather than looking at the bigger picture collectively. And I think that's kind of what we were kind of doing a little bit here. Well, this. And to go to your, respond to you, Dan. England does take, the way I understand, England does give you a test, an aptitude test of some sort, whether or not you can go to college or not. And you have to, Carol, you may know about it.
Yeah, I disagree with it.
You don't agree with it?
I've seen way too many kids who finally came to realize what they wanted sometime between 18 and 25, and then buckle down and did it.
Yes.
If they'd taken the test, if we had the test system, they would have been written off at 15, mm-hmm. when they didn't have a boyfriend. You know, we were very lucky. I think Wade was age 3 when I was teaching. Just because that's who he was. Les wanted to be a lawyer, but she had no idea why. I don't know if she has any idea. But nevertheless,
see,
they had goals. They knew what they wanted, and it stuck reasonably well. But
everybody's different.
And there are so many more choices now than most of us have.
Yeah, so many choices. Now, I mean, if I had the mindset that I had now, have now, back in high school, I probably would have been a really good student. I'll grant you that. I mean, that's for sure. I wish I would have studied harder and, you know, whatnot, and would have buckled down. But I had no clue what I was doing. I was too much struggling with my inner self and everything else around me that books, what are you, crazy? I barely made it through. It wasn't that I wasn't smart enough to do it, I just didn't buckle down to do it. Supposedly I had a high IQ.
I think you're making up for that. I know you listen to books on tape when you're driving. But
nevertheless, it took me half my lifetime to get me to this point.
So, you got
it. You know?
Yeah, you got it.
I understand that. But to get to Carol's point, not everybody, a simple test like England takes is not an answer to it. You're inhibiting again, I think in some ways. Am I suggesting that there's a good answer? No, I don't think he suggests a good answer other than that he is going to suggest that college debt, that there is another world out there that we can create. We don't have to have the same old institutions that we have it for, you know, we can change our institutions. Yes, similar to what he said here.
The school recognizes that, and they are focusing on getting alums to support this concept, and they have more money available to the kids, so taking my spending money all through college. And I did my work in excess of $1,000. But, you know, he gave me my spending money. It was something that I didn't have to ask my parents for. And that's not, you know, that's not really totally possible now across the board. So there are some extenuating circumstances in terms of our American economy. We are making it harder for kids.
I think that's true. The average person who has to get a student loan and to pay for their education is going to have a tremendous debt on their hands.
Charge card companies don't make it much better once they get to college. They'll give them all the charge cards they want.
Consumer generated. Then it's your responsibility if you do these things. Yes, there's a certain level of responsibility, but I think education should be something that's provided, along with healthcare and some other things, should be provided. And that's where he's going to end up at the end, where he says, we can change some of these institutions' way of doing things. We have to, yes, it's a political issue and whatnot, and he's suggesting that college education should be free, and or certainly reduced down to the point where you can afford it. And that's where he's going. And he says collectively, we can change things. I mean, look at the current situation that we're in right now. Politically, we're in a tough situation, I think. I mean, we got two sides that are, you know, miles apart in about everything. So how are you going to get anything done? Don't pay the professors that much. Cut their benefits, right? Isn't that the American way? I agree. They don't make that much as it is now. Any other comments somebody you want to share? I think what lies into the future sometimes, he says in the last paragraph, another world is possible. It is possible. We are changing. There is a lot of positive things out there going on, for sure. I mean, sometimes we dwell on a lot of the small things. But I think it's also important that we recognize the problems that we have. I mean, you have to be, you know, open-minded enough and realistic enough to realize that we have a problem. There is a world without never-ending debt. I think we are a consumer world in which we think debt is just part of us. I think there is we can create another world where we can share with one another, similar to what I read here in Acts. You can share the goods, in a field rather than a pyramid form, and share them, and we can collectively share all the goods and the wealth of this world. One of the things that he wrote in the article is that, you know, we talk about global warming and what have you, and the personal responsibility that's laid on each one of us to recycle. When the industry, the top 100 companies produce 70% of the pollution. So here we are arguing over plastic straws or paper straws when, you know, yes, we should, but guilt is laid on us when really the companies, large manufacturers, I mean, you know, that they get away with whatever.
So we could learn to drink directly out of the glass through a straw.
Well, paper straws. Biodegradable. The world is changing. I said to someone over Saturday, I said in 5 years you'll probably be driving an electric car. And in the cities, I think it's going to be that. The world is changing. There's no question about it. I think the idea of a personally owned vehicle is going to go out the door because we can't afford it to start off with. So electric cars aren't going to be any cheaper. I don't know. In some ways, I would like to be around for another 100 years, 1,000 years, just to see what happens. You know, I'd be really curious to come back and take a look, see what's really happening. It really would. I think I would find it really fascinating. But I think there always seems to be this balance of good and evil. You know, for every good product that's made, there's always a side effect or whatever that comes with it. It seems that way.
If we look back after 100 years, we wouldn't see nothing here.
Oh, you wouldn't see nothing here?
It'd be gone.
Oh. Oh, we'd be annihilated?
Yeah, bare world.
Oh, bare.
Burn up everything else.
1,000 years? 100 years?
It'd be longer.
Yeah, I
I do believe that, you know, I believe in God and forces out there. I don't think they're going to allow certain things to happen. At least I have faith that that's, I think as far as annihilating us all, I don't know. I think sometimes that we are going to be here for a long, long time. Myself. We may think differently and act differently, but I think the world's going to stay around for a while.
That one town in California, the whole, every house in it burned.
Yeah. If you build, what is it, the Bible says, if you build on a sand or whatever, different types of foundation, I don't know if you've been to California, but you can see where all this dirt eroded down and created, and it's like mud, and it's dry because it's arid, and then they build on it, and then they wonder why they have mudslides. And so I think we need to take some smart steps, and you can't let underbrush grow forever because you want to save a bug. There's a way to have both. You know, I mean, you got to clean the underbrush out. And fires have, as long as I can remember, running out west in the truck, they've had fires ever since I can remember. It's just that we're building in these places that we shouldn't build. I don't have the answer. I mean, obviously no one probably does. But I think you could build with a lot more fire retardant materials. You know, you have siding that's rubber that goes woof. You know, if you've ever seen burn a piece of siding, it goes woof, like no time flat. So I think we need to change some things. We need to be open. We can't be based on pure profit only. And that, I think, is where we were founded. Anybody else have anything you want to say? It was kind of a different message.
That's maybe a huge statement that we just said.
What?
We can't build on pure profit.
Yeah. But they're retooling to build electric cars, so they must have something in the wings that they're going to do.
This is on the list of the ones that are going to be discontinued as of the 2019 model, which is the last one.
Well, we don't drive Model Ts no more either. We drive cars a lot more. So, I mean, it's going to take a long...
Right, if you're taking out some of these, and one of the Prius models is going out. So hopefully what they take out, they have a plan to replace with something better.
Yes, I think they're on the cusp of coming out with some new technology. For, I mean, the trucking industry, even the, like delivery trucks are talking about electric trucks to deliver. I mean, that is fast. Freightliner and was owned by Delmar, I think it is. I don't know. It's a big conglomerate. Anyway, they're coming out with a line of delivery trucks real soon. They're all electric. I think that there's going to be a lot of problems. There's going to be a lot of good things. Life is going to continue differently, and it's going to continue. And I think sometimes we look, we're, most of us here are a little old. I mean, getting towards, I shouldn't say a little old. We have some age. We lived a few years. And so as the longer, at least I find this, the longer I can look back and see and reflect, I think sometimes your worries rise somewhat, your concerns rise a little more, your perspective is greater, and you have a tendency to think that things are going to get maybe worse. But I try to look at it more positively. Things are going to get better. Look at all the inventions that are coming out and are going to continue to come out. And I'm not a doomsday person at all. I'm not. I think I look at it positively, and I think two things got to happen. Religious thought has to change, and everything is, can't be based on profit. I think if we do them two things, and we have to start caring about our people, we have to, I'm going to start hammering away again. I don't want to. I want to make one concluding statement. And that is, if I find it, well, I know what it is. My thoughts on the good news or the how to change things, we have to do what Jesus said. to love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and to love your neighbor as yourself. Now, the more you think about that, the more complicated that gets, the more in-depth that gets, just to love your neighbor as yourself. The implications of that is tremendous. And that's where he kind of went with hinted towards the end. We have to care and love our neighbor as ourselves. Don't matter what it is. And that, in my world, and my understanding of theology and faith, kills all the hatred that there is. If you can love your neighbor as yourself and have respect for that person, no matter how different they are, you're doing the gospel. You're doing what Jesus said. And I hope this year that grows more. Amen.
Praise God from above.
hearts of all who are gathered here, we give with glad and generous hearts. Please accept our offerings, both monetarily and otherwise,